Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me on this week's Relax Back UK show. My guest is Sarah Turner, and she works in the world of photobiomodulation, otherwise known as PBM. And there are a number of people doing serious work on this area, and the preliminary results do seem positive.
It's very underrated, very safe, very efficacious, and now has a growing body of evidence behind it.
However, Sarah plans to do more trials and also larger trials, as this is really needed to show its efficacy or otherwise.
So what we're talking about is very early stage proof of concept rather than any kind of clinical evidence.
So please do stay tuned for a great show. Thank you. Sarah Turner is from the company Sarah Thrive. She's been a guest on the show before. She works in the area of photobiomodulation. But I thought it would be good to go back to basics and have a bit of a recap. So I asked her, what really is photobiomodulation first off?
So in short, it's light therapy. It's using light as a therapeutic tool. Photo is light, bio, you know, to your biology, and modulate something. So it's just changing your biology with light. So light therapeutics is probably an easier way, or red light therapy sometimes.
Okay. How on earth did you get into such a field? Because it is a bit different, isn't it?
It is. And actually, initially, it seems a bit fanciful, you know, that you can do all of these amazing things by just shining light on various parts of the body. And I was just as skeptical as the rest, actually, when I started. My background was pretty conservative. I started in pharmaceutical research, and then I went on to study nutrition and clinical neuroscience. But then I moved to the States and I got involved in this whole biohacking scene, which is, again, it's another long word, but it really just means using your environment and lifestyle changes to have an effect on health. And light was one of the things that I was looking at there. And I was lucky enough to get myself on a trial actually for Parkinson's disease, and saw for myself firsthand that people actually had an effect from this therapy. And that's really what was the turning point in my career to get me to start a company based on this, because it really is something that is very underrated, very safe, very efficacious, and now has a growing body of evidence behind it. I think it's just not so much in the press right now because it is, like a nascent field. But actually, every day there's more and more coming out about it, and I think that the public are becoming more aware of how the body responds to light. So it's very gratifying to be in this industry.
All right. So you went ahead and started a company and developed a machine. That's not really quite the right. What do you call it? A device, I suppose.
Yeah, a technology, a device. Actually, I have two devices, so I call it a system. But yes, you're right. It's a delivery device for light. Okay.
And so explain just quickly what that is.
So I'm really all about the brain. You know, I have my qualification is neuroscience, and I really think that, you know, right now, especially at this time, we should all be focusing on brain. You know, if you've got a good brain, you know, you can solve pretty much anything else. If you haven't got a good brain, you know, that's not a good place to be. So I focus solely on brain. So I have one of the devices that goes on the head to target the brain. And I also have a device that goes on the gut, because from my other various qualifications, you know, I understand the body as a system. You know, we're an interconnected system. You can't really separate out your organs. And the gut and the brain particularly are connected in a very real way. So if you want to have a good brain, you really do need to start in the gut. So my system is aimed at brain and gut wellness, but it's two devices, one that goes on the head and one that goes on the gut. Very simple devices, but actually quite sophisticated in what we can do with them. So they're just, very lightweight battery operated devices that you wear on those two areas.
Okay. So I've got lots of sort of more detailed questions to go through, but I want to start off with, and I think we did cover this last time, but I think it's just worth revisiting it. If you are trying to do something to your brain and you shine a light at your head, well, is the light actually going to get to your brain? Because there's stuff in the way, hair, skin, skull, and probably lots of other things as well. So surely that doesn't do any good at all, does it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And that's what everybody says. But actually, our bodies are quite transparent to this near infrared light. So when we say red light therapy, we're talking about visible red that you can see, you know, like you would get on the lights on the back of your car, you know, red light you can see. Mm-hmm. But actually, if you go a bit further in the wavelength, so the color in light is really related to the wavelength. If you go just a little bit of a longer wavelength, you get what we call near infrared. And that will penetrate deep into the body. It will go through bone. It won't get too far onto the brain, perhaps just onto the surface, but that's enough to have its effect. So yes, although it does seem like our brains are kind of encased in dark, that's not actually the case. Actually, a lot of light is getting in.
Okay. And so same with the gut as well, presumably.
The gut is easier, yeah, because you haven't got the bone to get through. So actually, you can penetrate the gut quite, you know, to a few inches. So yes, the body is transparent to the light. The depth of transparency depends on the wavelength. So red light will be surface. That's why you see people with face masks. You know, they kind of want to get wrinkles and things, so they use red light. But then these ones that are activating the organs are near infrared light. But it will penetrate through. And actually, you know, the skull may even act as a lens, you know, to focus that light onto the brain. So although we kind of have this, you know, this kind of feeling that we have all these barriers, actually, you know, light is something that the body has evolved with. And so we are actually covered in light receivers, if you like, because, you know, that we're humans, we're meant to be outside, we're diurnal creatures. We react to different wavelengths of light.
Certainly, yeah. We've developed over thousands of years, been outside, and now we spend a lot of time inside. So from, so dealing with light from that point of view, I guess could start to try and make some sense. But you have done some work. You've done a study to kind of at the start of really doing proper scientific research into this, and you have done a study, and I've got it in front of me. It's called the Prospective Study Evaluating the Safety and Efficacy of the Sera System, and mm-hmm. you're hoping to get that published shortly in a peer-reviewed journal of some sort. So I'm hoping, although that's not yet published, we can talk a bit about that now.
Yeah, for sure. Yes. I mean, my background is research. So I'm all about the research. But as probably you and your audience know, you know, it's not an easy or an inexpensive thing to get a full on clinical trial. So we're starting off with these proof of concepts. So we've done one study which was independently reviewed by a company called Heads Up, which was done with our client base. And we've done a documented case study of one of our users with ALS, which in UK is called motor neuron disease. And then we're also documenting some of our other case studies with neurodegeneration. And both of the case study series are under Durham University. So we have their research ethics. So we're trying to make these small little studies. We're trying to get them published. That will give us proof of concept to go on to do a bigger clinical trial.
Okay. So the objective of this study that I just mentioned, the prospective study evaluating the safety, that was with how many people?
That was 31 people.
Okay. And what was the sort of overall objective how did it work? What did you do?
Yeah, so we recruited people that were already using our device. So this was people who were already users of the system. So when they bought the system, they were asked whether they wanted to opt into a clinical trial. So we took people from, you know, a diverse range of conditions. I know that was one of the questions that you asked me when we're kind of having a chat earlier, you know, what conditions did you select? But we didn't actually, we just took people who were prospective users of the device. And we used something called a measure yourself outcome profile, because what we wanted to do was look at what really matters to the person rather than focusing on any kind of diagnosis. Because sometimes, you know, what matters to the person is not necessarily part of a specified disease condition. So, you know, you may be diagnosed with Alzheimer's, but actually the thing that bothers you the most is that you're not able to get outside and see your grandchildren. You know, so it's kind of, we wanted to focus on a meaningful score rather than a particular condition. So we used this measure yourself outcome profile where we took the main symptom that was most troublesome to the person, and we scored that. It's a recognized tool that's used in the industry, used in scientific profiling. But
Okay. All right. So you didn't say, right, we need patients that have all got, I don't know, migraine headaches or something like that. You said, okay, what is your problem? So it could have been anything almost.
it could have been almost anything. I mean, the people that come to us are focused on gut and brain because that's what the system's all about. So mainly people have got those symptoms. But of course, you know, you can have IBS but still have brain fog is the thing that bothers you the most. You know, it really depends where people are at. We wanted to give people a little bit of feeling of agency, I suppose, like they could kind of select the symptom that they felt that was most important or pressing for them to resolve. I mean, we also did general wellness scores, and we also, for some of the people who had wearables, we did wearables. So we did things like heart rate variability. But I
Okay, all
think
right. So,
that was the most important thing, is that we wanted to measure what is the most meaningful measurement for the actual individual rather than worrying about
right. Perhaps you could give me some examples of some of the things that those people, how they answer that question then. What is it that you're trying to solve? You know, what's the most meaningful thing to you that would make my life better?
Well,
What kind of things cropped
for
up?
most people, you know, it's very simple things like having bloating. You know, that it's something that's not a medical condition, but actually very bothersome on a day-to-day basis. You know, for a lot of people, it's, you know, not being able to remember things. For a lot of people, it may be muscle soreness. There are different things that are kind of daily symptoms that just wear you down, you know, and I think a lot of people, you know, chronic tiredness, fatigue, all of these things that are not at an actual disease state, but that, you know, cause people actually a lot of stress. So I think we had a lot of people with pain. We had a lot of people with gastro symptoms. We had a lot of people with kind of low level brain symptoms.
Okay, all right. I'm just thinking, all right, but you can't go ahead and say, right, this is a cure all, this will cure you of all these things, because you're saying, I mean, it's not it just sounds a bit peculiar.
Oh, really? Well, it is kind of a way that a lot of these trials go ahead. And actually, we are a wellness device. We're not a medical device. So what we're really looking to do on that particular study was see if we could give people a better quality of life. You know, can we take people from where they're at to better, to improved, by measuring what is the most meaningful score for them. But we did look at general wellness too, and we did see an increase in overall general wellness. And like I say, for those who had wearables, we saw some changes in measured metrics.
All right. I'll definitely want to ask you about those two things, but let's wellness first. That is, I mean, wellness is a wonderful thing. It's lovely to be well. Lots of people talking about it, but what is it? It's such a difficult thing to measure. How can you possibly measure wellness with your 31 people and ask them, is your wellness better? Because that could mean almost anything. Tell us a bit more about that.
The station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, it can mean almost anything, and it's very subjective for people. But I think even to get an indication of a subjective, you know, what is your wellness? What, how do you feel on a score of one? It's 1 to 6. How do you feel on a score of 1 to 6? I think you can just get an idea of where people's subjective state of mind using that score. So it's a very crude measure, and it is subjective, but it gives us a measurement of where people are at.
Okay, all right. What about the wearables? Because that's there's something that you can certainly measure about that, and I like measurements and results and numbers and things. You can probably tell. What sort of numbers did you get from wearables? And what?
We had less people on wearables because although we're kind of you and I and maybe some of the audience are into kind of measurement and biohacking and things, it's still something that's not got mass adoption. And a lot of people who are on our system, they're just starting out on this health journey. So we had a small proportion of people who were on wearables, and I think we didn't see too much shift in heart rate variability, but it was a 3 month study. And the interesting thing about light therapy is it acts a little bit like a low-level stressor, like a hormetic stress. It's a bit like exercise in that way. So quite often with people, you see an initial drop in heart rate variability as their body adjusts, and then you see this bounce back to baseline. So we didn't see too much of a shift there, but I think a 3 month study was not quite long enough to see that effect. And also, we didn't quite have enough people on the wearable tech. But to me, that's the next phase to go to because although the wearable tech, there is a little bit of a question about how accurate it is between people. I think for an individual, you can definitely see trends there, you know, whether they have an upward trend or a downward trend in their personal HIV, heart rate variability score.
Okay, so for the wearables, you were just looking at heart rate, really.
Heart rate variability, not heart rate. We were
Yeah,
mainly,
yeah.
and sleep scores. You know, we're also interested in sleep because one of the things that light therapy has been shown to do in the literature is help with sleep, particularly deep sleep, which is hugely important for any chronic condition. So we were also looking at sleep scores. But like I said, I think we saw a little bit of a shift in the data there, but we didn't have enough people on the tech. But it is enough to do a study where we can then maybe issue a measurement device like Oura or Whoop or
Yeah.
Garmin or Fitbit.
Okay. So your 31 people say they're doing well in for the various things that they want to do well in, and they've got some good scores on the wearables in the for the individuals their heart rate is looking good, and also good scores for wellness in whichever way that is measured. So I suppose the question's got to be, if all that is happening and the light is causing something to go on, what is the light actually doing? When the light hits the edge of my brain, what's happening?
Yeah, and this is where, you know, we see a commonality across all kinds of conditions. You know, to further go into your question about, you know, selecting a condition, because what the light is actually doing, it's targeting the mitochondria, which is where your body makes energy. So you're actually stimulating these little organelles that are within all the cells of the body to produce more energy. And that's really a commonality between almost all chronic health conditions is this lack of energy. You're also helping with blood flow. You release a little bit of transient release of nitric oxide, so you have better oxygen delivery to cells and greater removal of toxins. So really what you're doing
Oh,
is
hang on. We'll come back to toxins because that's a there can be when people start talking about toxins, I do get worried sometimes because a lot of sort of new age people say, oh yes, it'll detoxify. But then if you ask them, all right, tell me what toxins you're removing, they kind of clam up. So
okay. All right. Let's rephrase
I suspect you won't.
that. You were good to pull me up on that. All I was saying is obviously when the cell is working, when you have metabolism going on, the cell is kind of working hard to get oxygen through, and then with that you have metabolic waste products that are generated that the body is dealing with. So maybe toxins is too strong a word. We're just talking about the results of metabolism in the cell. And you need and you need to clear that, and the body does that quite happily. It does it even better if you have good blood flow, if you have good oxygenation to the cell, and the cell is kind of functioning optimally. So what
Excellent.
we're saying is that a lot of conditions are helped by having a better metabolic speed, basically, which is what you're doing with light therapy. You're just helping that cellular efficacy. And so that's why it's something that's, it seems like a kind of panacea that you can use it for anything, but almost every condition has this root issue of you need energy to do anything in the body.
Okay.
Give the
And
body energy, it will do it itself.
is it the same thing that's happening in the brain as well as the gut?
You have the same, you have the same cellular machinery in the gut as in the brain. Actually, the gut has a lot of neural tissue. You know, it's not called the second brain for nothing. That there's a lot of neurons in the gut, and the gut makes a lot of neurotransmitters. So the gut is very similar in composition to brain tissue. You know, you have similar tissue there. So when you're stimulating the mitochondria in the brain and the gut, you're having this similar effect. Obviously, there are specialisms in the two organs where you can see differences. And certainly in the brain, there's all kinds of wonderful things that are still in, we're still investigating, like growth factors and cell signaling and what happens to calcium. But on a very basic level, and you're just giving those cells energy. And whether it's in the brain or the gut, that's what the body needs in order to heal.
Okay.
Or
All
recover, or to, or, you know, it's not even about healing, you know, it's even just about functioning at the most optimum it can.
right. All right. So, I mean, we all feel a little bit better if we get a little bit of sun.
Yes,
I mean,
we do.
have people said that to you? I mean, is there a similarity here? I mean, does it actually feel warm when you use the thing, or?
What we're doing is, I mean, like you said before, you know, we are outside animals that now live inside. And we have evolved seeing more of the sun. So at sunrise and sunset, that's when you get this long wave near infrared light. So when you're outside at those times, that's when you're getting this exposure to this long wave near infrared light, the light that's used in these devices. And yeah, your body actually creates opiates in response to being out in the sun. You know, it's a real thing. You really do get that kind of high from being in the sun because your body wants you out there. You know, we are designed to be out there. Our bodies reward us for being in that light because it's good for us. So yes, these light therapy devices are really mimicking that early morning and late evening light that we get from sunrise and sunset because we just.
Certainly, people really enjoy seeing a sunset. I mean,
Yeah.
I'm rarely up in time to see the sunrise, but I love seeing a sunset. And okay, intriguing. So it could be
You'll
built
end
into
up
us.
time to see the sunrise, but your body is still expecting to see it. If you don't see the sunrise, which is because of the angle of the sun in the sky, that's when these long wave light become most predominant. If you miss that, you're kind of missing an essential nutrient almost. I kind of see a similarity between where we're at now and where we were at when we were seafaring and we sent sailors off and they all got scurvy and we didn't know why. And it turned out that, you know, it was a lack of vitamin C. And so the solution was we send them off with a barrel load of lemons, and that helped with that problem. We're in a very similar position now in that we are all in these boxes where we don't see sunrise. And so we're deficient in that nutrient, you know, sun.
Sure.
And so really, when you put that back in the form of these technologies, then you see a very similar thing that happens with replacing vitamin C in the body.
Yeah. Okay. I want to just bring you back to the study again, a little bit. For out of these 31 participants, were there any of them that kind of really surprised you? Did any of them have any stories or scores that kind of, really took you by surprise?
Not in that particular group, because as I said, these were people that were just from our customer base and we just wanted to see what would happen. The other study that I sent you, which is a documented case study, and we do have people that have really stood out and surprised us, and they're the ones that we're pulling together in a case series with Durham.
All right. I'm going to I will come back to those, I promise, and there'll be lots of opportunity. But just on this particular study, there's always this fear is not the right word, but a question. If you give someone something and say, actually, this might work for you, there's a bit of a placebo effect. So of these 31 people that were on the study, couldn't it just have been sort of a placebo effect? We're taking an interest in you. We're giving you this particular device. Because that's a fair comment, I think, and that you must have an answer to that.
Well, it's a fair comment, and we didn't do control and we didn't do sham, because in these studies, you know, if you're going to do a very formal clinical trial, not only would you want to have a control group that doesn't have an intervention, but you also might like to have a sham device, which is a device that looks like the active one, but actually isn't working. So you would really want to have three groups. So that would take this 30 cohort up to 90, you know, and become a very big animal, which we didn't have the funds in this particular case to do it. The thing that we were more interested in this study was also, do people report side effects? Do people report any interactions with anything else that they're doing? So no, we didn't see that. But you're totally right. This isn't a standard clinical trial where you would need to see controls and shams and everything else. That's definitely the next phase for sure.
That was going to be my next question. Yeah. So for next time round, because that's quite a big step up, isn't it? Because lots more people, a lot more sophisticated kind of trial. Is that the next stage then?
That's the next stage, and really what we need to do for that, which is on the back of these studies, is that then we would look to get an investment, because obviously we were involved to a certain extent in the data collection of these, although the one that you're talking about was independently reviewed. If you're going to do a clinical trial, then you have to have hands off that totally. So then you need to employ a contract research lab that would totally do the study for you, so that there's no bias there at all. So that is the next phase, which we go now into an investment round, and then we look to do have a contract lab totally take care of the study. So that is exactly where we're at right now, and we're looking to do that fundraise for neurodegeneration and motor neuron disease, because that's where at the moment we're kind of focusing.
Which brings me on to, I've interrupted you at least twice now when you've wanted to talk about a couple of case studies.
Yes.
Certainly about motor neuron disease. Yeah. So tell us about those.
Yeah, so we had a really good result. Actually, first of all, I'm not making a claim for this device, for this condition. This is just, I'm reporting on a result that's going to be published. I will just put that out there for the audience. We're not at all making any claims for any of these health conditions, and I'm not a medical doctor. So with that said, one of the most interesting case studies we had was an individual with motor neuron. And also, just for full transparency, this individual is now so much improved that he works within the company. So, so just in case anybody catches that out and says, hang on a minute, this is one of your team members. Yes, he is one of our team members. But the reason why this is so interesting is he saw through using the device, and he used the device for an extended period. That's another thing to note, because the previous study was only a 3-month study. This now is looking into a year of use. And it just goes to show that for some of these longer-term conditions, you know, consistency in using the device over a period of time is key. But he saw a reversal in his ALS functioning rating score, which is the score that's used to assess this condition, which is very, very rare to see even a stabilization, let alone an increase in that score. So that's why this was taken up by Durham, because it was something that was very interesting to them. Actually, they were also interviewed on BBC about it, because it's such an interesting and pretty amazing result. So that we're also publishing. That was a score from 32 to 37, a 5-point gain, which is pretty unheard of.
So can you describe for us kind of what that actually means. Like, could this chap not walk and now he can run? I'm sure that's not the case, but can you kind of describe in real terms what he went from and to?
Yeah, well, the functioning score is based on things like swallowing, walking, hand function, muscle tone, those kinds of things. So it's an assessment that's made on those things. And as you know, ALS, a motor neuron, is a very severely debilitating and progressive illness. So in this particular case, the individual went from having a feeding tube fitted to not having to use it and then going on to kind of eating very normally. He also is able to stand unaided for the first time in 4.5 years. So it's certainly
major,
not
major difference,
major and life changing differences. Of course, it's still a very debilitating condition. So he's still in a chair. He still has a lot of issues that he's dealing with. But certainly to not see progression over that period of time was very heartening.
Good. All right. So that's definitely worth mentioning. I mean, this isn't just it is an individual case study, but it's still.
Yes. And that's something to point out. It's one case, and we are now continuing this with other people with the same condition. And we're not seeing as dramatic an improvement. We are seeing other improvements. So this is something that we're following up on, especially things like swallowing. You know, this is something that everybody takes for granted, but it's, you know, it's such a stressful and debilitating part of that condition that if we can even have a tiny effect on that, you know, it's a win. So we're, but yes, this study was just one person. The previous study had no control. So what we're talking about is very early stage proof of concept rather than any kind of clinical evidence.
All right, so here's a question which is probably unfair, but I'll ask it anyway. Is it likely that then in this particular case, the process of what the light is doing is the same as in the study with 31 people? Will it be this creating extra energy in the cells or something completely different potentially?
No, I think it's the same effect whatever is going on. It's just giving the mitochondria the fuel it needs. You know, I'm saying just like it's a simple thing, but actually mitochondria are now kind of almost being rediscovered by science as something very, very crucial to our health and something we need to take care of, giving the body the energy it needs. Also, the inflammation response. We know that light therapy has an effect on the inflammation response. So the combined effect of more energy plus a reduction in inflammation, that's a very powerful combination. Most people are suffering from some kind of low-level inflammation in their bodies, and people with these chronic health conditions can have potentially, you know, very high inflammatory markers and inflammation going on. So reducing inflammation plus giving the body energy, I think, is really where it's at for any condition that we're talking about, not just ALS, MND.
Certainly. Okay. Inflammation is one thing that often kind of confuses me a little bit, I have to say. So if I walk into a door and bump my head or something, I get a bump. Yes. I get inflammation. That's not what you mean there, is it, though? You're talking about something else.
Well, no, it is kind of what, if you walk into a door and you have a bump in your head, you have inflammation, you have a whole cascade of reactions. It's not just kind of you have a physical bump, but also beneath your skin, white blood cells are going to that area, cytokines are going to that area, your body's activating that heal response. Now, that's good, that's adaptive. And then over time, that will reduce as your body heals. Now, for people with chronic conditions, they can be in a state where that process is ongoing in the body. And it takes a lot of energy for your body to do that. Like, you may notice if you do walk into a door and you have a serious illness, you may feel a bit groggy and you might want to lay down because your body wants you to conserve energy. It's a highly energetic process. Now, people are walking around with what we call chronic inflammation, where your body's in this heightened state all the time, potentially due to neurodegeneration, or maybe sometimes even stress can cause this chronic inflammatory process. And what we really want to do is give the body the energy that it needs in order to overcome that, you know, in order to actually do the healing, so the body hasn't constantly got this inflammation program switched on. So you're
Right.
totally right. That's exactly what inflammation is. It's good if you walk into a door and you want to heal. It's not so good to have that running the whole time. It takes a lot of energy from the body, and eventually the body will start to wear out as it tries to maintain that process.
Excellent. All right. No, I get that. Thank you. Okay. So, if people are listening to this and thinking, goodness, you know, this is actually really quite interesting. I'd like to find out a bit more. Can you suggest a couple of good resources where they can, I don't know, look at papers, or if people have written stuff that is a bit more less scientific, so regular people like me can read it and understand it and see what's going on. Any good resources they can check out?
Well, first of all, I'm going to say to go to Sarah Thrive website, because we have tried to break the science down for people, and we have something called a knowledge hub page where people can look at some videos where we've broken that down. And also on our YouTube, we have a lot of videos breaking down the science. We also have these, excuse me. We also have these papers where we've pulled out the main result and explained what they mean. There's some really good lay books that have been written on it. There's a book by Ari Witten, Red Light Therapy. It's a little bit out of date now, but that gives the kind of basis of what's going on. Obviously, if you want to do a deep dive, you just need to go onto PubMed and put in photobiomodulation times whatever condition you're looking at, and really a lot will come up. And if you're au fait now with the any of these AI chatbots, which I'm sure most people are, you know,
Right.
you put in the study and get it to pull out the bullet points. I mean, that's something that's I feel like is available to most people now. The free version of ChatGPT will give you a really good summary of even the most technical science report. But we've tried to do it on our website. So if people go to the Knowledge Hub, certainly they can start there at the simple
Right.
videos that we've got. Yeah.
Excellent. Good. Right. So, look, Sarah, I would love to invite you back when you have sort of done the next tranche of work, which you kind of suggested would be a big trial, or a bigger trial.
Sure.
So here's a very difficult question. When should I be inviting you back? How long is this going to take?
Well, to be honest, a few weeks ago, I would have said, okay, yeah, let's see, you know, maybe let's do it in a year's time. But actually, I had some good news this week with people looking to invest in different kinds of trials. I mean, it would still probably be a year, you know. These things take a long time to do, but at
Yeah.
least, hopefully, you know, in 6 months, I will know exactly what we can do, where we could do the trial, what it will be on, that kind of thing. So it's not something that happens overnight, as I'm sure people realize, you know, that it's a big deal to kind of get these studies going. But I think there is more interest in it now, and people are beginning to see the value of it. And so I think we'll begin to see more and more trials come out. And even if it's not using my device, I do know of a few competitor companies that are getting some good results coming out that would also be worth reviewing, because I think we're in a small enough space that it's all about collaboration, not competition. And even seeing people who've got similar devices but same outputs, it's worth reviewing their data, because it all helps to strengthen the position of photobiomodulation or light therapy in general.
Good. Well, certainly, very interesting, and thank you so much for taking the time to chat, Sarah. It really is much appreciated.
Thank you, Mike. It's always good to come on and talk to you, so thanks for the invite.
Thank you very much to Sarah Turner for taking the time to chat to me about her work on photobiomodulation. Thank you to you for listening, and have a healthy week until next week.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.